Welcome to the Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I am your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And as always, I am joined by my stellar co-host, DBB's draft expert, Blake Silverman. We are recording here late at night, right after the Pistons 112-118 loss to the New York Knicks in New York City in Madison Square Garden. And all right, listen, we're just going to hop right into this one, okay? Because I think there's a lot that we can talk about here, both good and bad. But I want to start with the positive, because you know what? They did play a competitive game. You had some pretty impressive, at least box score performances from three guards on this roster. Blake, where do you want to open this up with tonight's game?
Yeah, I mean, overall, it was nice to see a decent performance. Like the past three, four, five games, they sort of just looked hopeless. So it was at least nice to see some heart and a competitive game tonight. What stood out to me the most, I think, and I mean, Cade and Killian Hayes both looked great. And I think what stood out to me initially is that Killian hasn't started the past few games after dealing with that shoulder injury. He came in, it allowed Cade to play off the ball a little bit more, and they look great. Like, it opened some easy looks for Cade, allowed him to move off the ball. With Killian, I mean, he was 10 for 13 with 23 points. It's always been a consistency with him. But I think overall, that's like the main positive that you can take from this loss.
Yeah, I agree. And definitely with how the game started off, you saw a lot more of Cade Cunningham operating off the ball, which honestly, I think kind of caught the Knicks off guard. Cade had a really good, really efficient first half of basketball. And a lot of it did come off just some weak side actions to get him some space, and then relying on Killian Hayes' passing acumen to get him the ball. And, you know, I think that if they're going to go this route with Killian Hayes next to him, this might be the way to do it. Because earlier in the season, what we had seen a lot of was Killian Hayes trying to drive out of a pick and roll or just out of a straight ISO and then try to kick out to Cade Cunningham, try to shift the defense that way, get him an advantage. And defenses just weren't respecting it, right? But this way, if you're running actions for Cade on the weak side, you really don't need any gravitational pull from Killian Hayes, right? You can just rely on his vision. And he did. He hit Cade on a couple of really nice ones. There's in the first quarter, that really nice skip pass to the opposite corner, and then a little backdoor cut later on that Cade gave, that Cade got the ball from Killian as well there. So that looked really good. And just, you know, reading this off Killian Hayes, this might have been his best game of the season. I mean, 23 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 for 3 from 3, and 10 of 13 from the floor. Now, he was 1 of 4 from the free throw line, but that's an aberration for him. That's not normal. He's a very good free throw shooter. So, yeah, what do you make of Killian Hayes tonight?
What I really liked from Killian, in addition to how he helped Cade out of the gate, like, I thought he was driving and really, like, hunting contact. He wasn't, like, he seemed more sure of himself than he normally is, or just when he goes through those cold spells. So, I don't know if Killian's the long-term solution. Like, I think I like the idea of having Cade play off the ball. And, I mean, taking Jaden Ivey out of the starting lineup, like, there's a thought, like, maybe you put Ivey in there and see if they could work together that way. Like, I don't know if Ivy is really like a primary ball handler either. So I get the idea of putting Hayes alongside Cade. But mainly, in addition to like what he did for Cade, what I really enjoyed from him was just the drives and really like playing his game with confidence. And it was working out for him, like going 10 for 13 from the floor tonight.
Yeah, and I will nitpick a little bit because he had two really nice, powerful drives to the rim where I thought he played through the contact, finished it. One was actually an and one, which was really, really nice to see out of him. Took me off guard, honestly. I didn't expect that out of him. But he was still pulling up for the floaters, for the elbow pull-ups. This game, they were going in. And when they're going in, they look great. like you mentioned earlier, the problem with him's been consistency, right? So like long run or even just Saturday against the Cavs, if he starts again, you know, I'm not sure you can bank on the mid-range dropping at the rate that it did against the Knicks, but I am pretty confident that you can count on his playmaking and passing vision to really help set up Cade Cunningham with some easy buckets, which is something. This is the first game this season that Cade's had a couple of easy baskets, not self-generated. Like he actually got assisted baskets, Blake. Like that, I cannot think of many other times this has happened so far this season. So I think that that's bankable. Like if they can keep leaning into that, I think good things are going to come from it. And you know, speaking of Cade, he went 31 points. Two rebounds, eight assists. He did have seven turnovers, but two steals, 12 of 20 from the floor, 4 of 9 from three-point range. You know, what did you like from Cade Cunningham against the Knicks? And I guess how much of this is sustainable? Because he's been playing really well for the past week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I just like the actions that he was playing in. I guess a little bit of it, like you said, is the adjustment to the starting group, who's around him, and maybe like throwing the Knicks a little bit off guard. I think also another thing is really just like his shooting. He was 4 for 9 from three tonight, so it was nice to see him shoot those at a high clip, and overall 12 for 20 from the floor. We've definitely seen stretches where he's been cold and the shots aren't falling, so it was good to see him score efficiently tonight. The turnovers are still a concern. He had 7 of them tonight, and like Mantis mentioned in the chat, Cade Cunningham didn't shoot a free throw until the fourth quarter, and I think it was actually 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter where I think he had 26 or 28 points at the time, so he got all those without shooting a free throw. I think maybe that was a little bit due to Hayes's addition in the starting lineup. Cade is playing a bit more off the ball, but still the whistle isn't there for Cade. I hope that comes along for him, but offensively, he looked good everywhere else tonight.
Yeah. With his game tonight, it was kind of a weird mix to me of a little bit of a throwback for him to either earlier in the season or back onto his rookie year with, like you mentioned, just not really getting a lot of contact at the rim, kind of fading away. The turnovers came up, it would be a big problem. And this was actually something he had more or less fixed going back a couple weeks now. His turnovers early on in the season when this was a big talking point were up over 5. Before tonight, I'm not sure what they're going to be after this 7 turnover outing, but he was back down to about 4.5, which is a big drop. You know, he's been taking the care of the ball a lot better. He has been getting to the free throw line better. So those two things did not show up against the Knicks. Those were problems again. But at the same time, he was really decisive to me. I don't know if you felt the same way when you're watching this, but you know, in the past, there have been a lot of times where he kind of gets the ball and he probes a little bit and tries to keep the defender on his back. And he's pretty good playing out of that kind of pace like that. But it's also ended up with a lot of, you know, 3 pump fakes at the rim where the guy doesn't go for any one of them. And then it's just a throwaway. We didn't see that a lot tonight. When he got the ball, he was either getting downhill or he was passing or he was just making a decision right away. And you know, maybe this is more of that 0.5 offense that Monty Williams had been talking about for a while. Like, I do think Cade looked not only more aggressive, but more decisive against the Knicks. And if that's something that we can see consistently, I do think you're going to see all of his efficiency numbers tick up a little bit. He just seemed more instinctual.
Yeah, there was one play actually where I had that thought, like specifically, I think it was late in the first half, Cade took a corner three. It didn't go down. There was a long rebound. It bounced back out, and I forgot who kicked it to Cade, but he was taking one from the same corner. He had a good look. maybe like before when the shot wasn't falling, he would have hesitated to take that shot, but he didn't hesitate. He put it right back up and that second one went down, which was nice to see. So yeah, I mean, I think if he does play more decisively and make those quick decisions, trusting his gut, I guess, and the guys around him, then maybe that does, like, that's what unlocks the most efficiency from Cade on the offensive side. And maybe it results in fewer turnovers as well.
Well, and he had a few finishes too, right? Tonight where he, you know, I don't know if this has been just he doesn't feel like he's got that much of a runway and maybe the Knicks were giving him more space, but he would get downhill quick and he'd elevate, actually go into Julius Randle. Like, I'm not sure the free throw problem against the Knicks. Like, I think there may have just been a few missed calls.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first time I've said that this season. You know, we've talked a lot about him needing to not fade away, all these other reasons why maybe he's not getting the calls. Like, I thought tonight there were a few legitimate just, yeah, he got fouled, but he fouled, you know, he pushed through it and he made the layup anyway. So it was, you know, whatever, who cares? Could have been an and one, but it didn't matter. But a lot of it was because he got up in the air and he went into the guy's body and he tried to finish instead of getting a little cute with it down underneath the hoop.
Yeah, I actually wanted to bring that. I meant to bring this up, I think, either last week or the week before. But now that we're talking about the foul thing a little bit, like, I went and looked on Cleaning the Glass that has some like foul drawing stats, and Cade gets fouled on 8.7% of his shots. So in comparison, that's in like the 60th percentile of guards in the NBA. So he's like average, a little bit above average, and he's actually improved in that sense. And I'll throw away last year because he only played in 12 games, but from his rookie season. So I think maybe just us watching it, we're seeing like this lead guy who has everything flowing through him and he's shooting 4 free throws a night, but he actually is like getting calls sometimes. I mean, I still think he gets a bad whistle, but I don't think it might be as bad as we see watching every game in and out and getting frustrated by it.
Well, and it stands out more because they don't have anyone else on this roster that's really drawing fouls at a acceptable rate for a lead scorer, right? I mean, Cade, do you know what he's at on average for the season so far in terms of free throw attempts per game?
Sorry, I'm trying to look at this really quick. Bad podcasting. I am looking at it right now. Okay, he is at 4.2 free throw attempts per game this season so far.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to guess. And what I was going to say there was, you know, long term, I'm not sure how much higher he really needs that number to get. He just needs to actually shoot the 4 to 5 free throw attempts per game. You know, he's been kind of a roller coaster on this so far this season. But, you know, to your point, it stands out when there's no one else that can do it. And I think that's kind of been the story of the season so far. So before we get too far into a couple of the problems, we'll call them problems, tonight against the Knicks, let's shout out really quickly Marcus Sasser, because that man's been in a slump for a while now, this entire losing streak. So essentially the month of November, outside of a couple of games where he's, you know, he's looked good, his shot's just not been falling. And as a rookie, that's pretty tough to deal with. But you know what? Tonight, 17 points, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, 5 of 7 from 3, 6 of 11 from the floor. In only 20 minutes, too. Like, great game from the rook.
Yeah, and like, he really is what kind of drove that second quarter run to get us tied at halftime and kept the Pistons like in the game at certain points. And like, what I love about him, and I mean, I don't think this has really ever not been a part of his game, even in the slump, is just like his confidence as well. If he has a good look, he's going to put it up. He's really not afraid. Like, I was kind of wondering if NBA range like would be not an issue, but if he wouldn't shoot at such like a high clip as he did in college just for like a little adjustment period. I think he's proven even through that slump, like he's capable of being a very good 3-point shooter in this league. He can also generate offense off of drives and kicks or whatever it is. Like, obviously the thing with him is always going to be the size, but I think he's proven that he's a scorer. He can get you a bucket. Hopefully he develops into like one of those guys the Pistons can look to when they need someone to go and get a bucket, because that's not something that we've had like through this streak and has really like led to a lot of these blowouts, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, he's so shifty, right? I mean, he took Julius Randle out of his shoes on a honestly broken play. Like they blitzed him in a pick and roll with two bigs. I believe it was Mitchell Robinson and Randle to stop the downhill momentum. He backed up. Robinson went back down to the roll man, and he just crossed the heck out of Julius Randle, sent him going in the wrong direction, and then buried the three as well. So for me, like, that is something I really underrated out of him coming out of college. Just the lateral quickness that he has, the contact balance that he has, and he has that ball on the string, right? He can just really create space, which really important for a guy his size. Right. You know, he's so small. He's so short. Like he's going to have to create space. It's not shocking that 5 out of his 6 makes from the floor tonight were threes. Right. But like you said, he's a streaky shooter, but he's a good shooter. And nights like tonight just kind of go to prove. And in the long run, you've got a good player here. You know, he's going to be a good one. I think I'm really impressed with him so far this season.
Yeah, it's just good to see for him. Like, obviously, this game, like, it's another loss. Like, things still need to change. Like, this team just needs to get one so bad. Like, I really thought it was going to be tonight. But especially just to see a guy like Marcus Sasser, who has been struggling lately. We were kind of wondering if he slipped out of the rotation because of his struggles or if he was going to go in and out. But I think tonight is huge for him, and it's just like huge for the team in general to have a guy like that in the second unit who you can go to, know has range and can knock down those shots. And also there's still some questions about him like defensively in this league, but you know the effort's always going to be there. So I think it's important to have someone like that you can really go to, because the offense has just been dead at some points throughout this streak.
Like, we've spent a good 18, 19 minutes on some positives out of the loss here to the Knicks. Let's talk about the other stuff. Let's just start here, all right? You got 31 points from Cade, 23 from Killian Hayes, 17 from Sasser. All three of those guys scored it very efficiently. The next highest scorer is Jalen Duren with 10. After that, it's Marvin Bagley with 8, Isaiah Livers with 6, and he went 2 for 8 from the floor, 1 of 5 from 3. You got Jaden Ivey, who had 5 points in only 13 minutes, which we'll talk about here in a second as well. Not a lot of other guys showed up is just kind of the blunt way to put this one.
Yeah.
So my question to you, sorry to cut you off there. My question to you is, obviously Monty Williams, he shook up the starting five. He changed up the rotation. What's the way out here? Because from just looking at this box score, like you've got a young team with a pretty inconsistent supporting cast around one very good player in Cade Cunningham, and everyone's got a turnover problem. and they don't have enough firepower to make up for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's an easy answer to that question, but at least tonight, what has kind of stuck out to me is Isaiah Stewart. And like I know he's the heart and soul of this team. Like he's shot the ball better this season. Like he's still not getting the respect that he probably should on the 3-point line, and that might not ever come, which limits the team in other ways. But I don't, there's still, like, we talked about his turnovers a few weeks ago, and I think with him, I mentioned it's just about doing too much. And I noticed tonight he seemed like he didn't really make up his mind what he wanted to do. He ended up like putting the ball on the floor, which led to like a turnover or just empty possession. I don't know. Like, I'm really interested to see when Bogdanovich is back, potentially Saturday against the Cavaliers. Like, if we're assuming that he is slotted into the starting lineup, like, who are we taking out? Is it Livers? Is it Stewart? Is it Hayes? I mean, I think if you just replace Stewart for Bogdanovich, like that's gonna give you the spacing that you need, and also allows Cade to like play off the ball if you keep Hayes or even put like a Marcus Sasser in there or something like that. I don't know. Like before the season, I assumed when I was looking through these rotations that Stewart would maybe be the guy that would be the sixth man off the bench, like a second big. I don't see Jalen Duren like coming out of the starting group when he's healthy. So it seems to me like the playing Stewart at the four, Duren at the five might, I don't want to say is fully like out of the picture, but it might just not be working right now. And put in a Bogdanovich for Stewart or someone else and just see how the whole Stew off the bench thing works, and maybe that unlocks the starting group to more scoring. How do you see it?
So I think a couple things are true here with Isaiah Stewart. The first one is something you and I have talked about before, right? You coming into the season, Isaiah Stewart was really the only young player on this roster that you could look at and you could say very confidently, okay, I know what his role is on a winning team. And that role was the third big off the bench, right? Well, on this Pistons team, he's the starting power forward. So he's really overextended there. And I think that shows. I think it really shows that he's overextended. So, you look at the stat line he put up tonight, 5 points, 7 rebounds, 2 turnovers, no assists, 1 of 4 from three, 2 of 6 from the floor, 32 minutes. Like, that's just not good. You can't say he played great defense on Julius Randle. Julius Randle lit up this game. He played great. Isaiah Stewart is a very good role player, and he would have a role on 30 teams in this league right now. But he wouldn't be starting for a lot of them. So I do think that he shows that he's overextended there. And the other part of this is our guy here, YouTube user, says, I think Stewart as a primary power forward, I think that's dead. It's over. Like, it's not just about the shot. That I've tried to stress that before, and I'm probably not done a good enough job about it, but he doesn't just need to shoot 38, 39, 40% from three to be a power forward in the NBA. Like, he has to put the ball on the floor. He has to make decisions off the bounce. He has to guard the wing pretty consistently. Like, these are all things he doesn't do well. And it's not his fault. Okay. It's not his fault that he can't do that at a starting level in the NBA because you know what? He has never in his life been asked to do that before. So this was always kind of a long shot experiment. And it was always, in my opinion, based on that he's got shooting potential, which he does. I mean, I know he went 1 of 4 tonight, but he's close to 40% on the season on good volume. He's shooting the ball well. Like, the problem's everything else, and everything else he can't do as an NBA power forward, at least as a starter. So to me, you know, Isaiah Stewart, he needs to be your backup combo big. You know, I think you can play him at either spot. I just, he needs to be a 5-4, not just a 4, which is almost all he's playing right now. I mean, I don't think he actually has played any minutes, or at least hardly any minutes, at the center position this year, except for when Jalen Duren was hurt. Like, it's just not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right. And I mean, I think if you do put him into that second unit, like, it helps, because we're going to, like, Marvin Bagley as our backup big right now. I know Wiseman got some time the past two games. Like, Stu is better defensively than both of them. So I think that helps raise the defensive floor in the second unit. And we know that unit has had some trouble scoring. So if they could at least, like, defend a little better, I think that's a positive. I mean, before the season started, I saw Stu as the first guy off the bench. I don't know. Like, I don't think the extension he got really has anything to do with it. I still think that's a very good contract, and with the cap the way it is, like, sure, I think it's going to look like a value. But I don't know. Like, I just want to see a starting lineup when Bogdanović is back, like, at least if it's just for a game, like, see what it looks like not going Stewart Duren as your front court.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, listen, I love Isaiah Stewart. I really like him. I've loved how he's played in Detroit. I think he is the leader that he gets talked up to be. He's a very high energy player. He's just overextended. And honestly, you look up and down this roster, I'm not sure there's a guy that isn't overextended right now. Maybe Marcus Sasser, because he is coming off the bench as a scoring guard, and that's kind of the perfect role for him. And you can make an argument for Jaden Ivey too, because he's being a bit underutilized. Which, actually, you know what? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Jaden Ivey a little bit. He played 13 minutes. A lot of those came in the fourth, which is good. But he didn't play the entire first quarter, and he didn't play the entire third quarter. This was like a weird two-quarter suspension or something internally. I don't know what the heck happened.
Yeah, that really...
I have no words.
That really confused me. We were texting about it when we didn't see Ivy in the first quarter. I think this podcast would have went a lot differently if Ivy didn't play at all. And I said, like, when we didn't see him in the first quarter, like, if he plays another 15 to 20 minutes, like, we need to talk about what's going on there. He picked up 3 fouls in the second quarter, so who knows, like, what happened or what Monty's plan was, why he didn't play in the first and then again in the third. I guess I'm giving him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt because of the fouls thing. We saw him for 8 minutes in the fourth quarter. He made one big three, which was really, like, his only shot of the night. But, yeah, it's just... the Jaden Ivey situation, I am trying to wrap my brain around, and I am having a struggle doing it right now. Again, when similar to what I was just saying about Stewart, like, I assumed, like, my preference would be him as the first guy off the bench, still getting heavy minutes. Then when we learned that Jaden Ivey was going to come off the bench to start the season and Stewart was in the starting lineup, I sort of thought the same thing. Jaden Ivey is going to get 20, 25, 30 minutes a game, and he's not really going to be, like, a true bench player. When he's come off the bench, that hasn't really been the case. Tonight was a little weird because of how Monty handled the rotations and then Ivey getting into foul trouble. I don't know what to think of it.
Yeah, all right. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, because you know what? That Lakers game, the way it looks right now, Jaden Ivey and Isaiah Thomson got benched. Okay. Matter of factly, that is what happened. What is wild to me, you know, I get it a bit with the Sar because Livers has had a couple of decent games in a row and he can shoot. So, okay. A Sar for Livers, fine. I don't love it, but I get it. Here are Killian Hayes' last five games from the floor. 3 of 9, 0 for 1, 3 of 6, 0 for 2, 2 of 6. I get that Jaden Ivey and none of those starters looked good against the Los Angeles Lakers. But how do you turn? And again, I get Killian Hayes had a good game tonight. He had a really good game tonight. Probably the best game of the season from Killian Hayes. But just based on the past, because that's what Jaden Ivey and Isaiah Thomson got benched for. They get benched. And Monty turns to a guy who's had five games where he may as well have just been a ghost out there. Like, he was a negative in all five of those games. And he gets moved up. Like, none of this is making sense to me. There's got to be something else going on with Jaden Ivey. I don't get this. Like, help.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't really want to speculate because I don't think anyone knows what is happening. But, like, maybe the staff knew that Killian wasn't 100% with his injury. They were holding him out. They were giving him the benefit of the doubt because he was playing a bit hurt. Once he was back to 100%, they put him in. That said, the way Ivy played and just like being a guy who could drive to the
hoop. Like, really quick, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
In every one of those games, Killian Hayes played more minutes than Jaden Ivey did tonight. Go on.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, I'm trying to make logic out of something that isn't logical. Because, yeah, I mean, it really isn't, I don't want to say it's not fair, I guess, but like, it might not be fair. Like, Jaden Ivey finally got a few games in the starting lineup. He looked great. And then he immediately gets slotted out for Killian Hayes and then doesn't play in the first quarter. Like, and it, not even that he didn't play in the first quarter, like the Pistons went 10 deep in the first quarter, and Jaden Ivey was not one of those 10 guys. Marcus Sasser was the first guy off the bench. Marcus Sasser had a good game, but just like, I don't know. It's so strange to me. I don't understand why. I hope we do understand why sometime soon, but it's not making sense.
No, it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, Jaden Ivey might be the highest potential 11th man in the NBA right now. He's the former fifth overall pick. He had a good rookie year. He played really well in the games that he started outside of the Lakers game, in which everyone played like hot garbage. Like, and then this is what it was. So we got to get into questions, and I'm just going to call an audible, and we're going to go with this one first. So this is our guy, Bobby Buckets from TVB. And he's asking, let's say it's January 15th. Every player in the NBA is available for trade. What's a fair deal for both sides for Jeremy Grant? He wants Jeremy Grant. But his second part of this is, what's another trade that you think the Pistons could make? And I'm going with this one first because we just talked about it. You had two guys score over 20. Sasser was at 17. Cade Cunningham got over 30. Only one other guy in double figures. This team does not have the talent to go win games like this. Like, there's a reason they didn't win a game in November. So Bobby Buckets wants to know what we can do about it.
You know, okay. So first, for getting Jeremy Grant, like, I don't know if that's something that we want to do. Like, he's obviously a guy who can help fill like what we're looking for. But he just signed like a 5-year deal, and going like on a 16 game losing streak, I don't know if you're ready to commit $27.5 million for 5 years. Will he help? Yes. Do serious changes need to be made? Yes. I played around with this to see what a potential trade would look like. Joe Harris and or Bojan plus Killian Hayes gets you to Jeremy Grant. I think that is essentially giving Portland a ton of flexibility in cap space because they're not committed to Jeremy Grant any longer. They can wash their hands of Harris or Bojan if they want to at the end of the year, as well as Killian Hayes. And also, maybe we have to send some like draft assets because I don't think you're getting Jeremy Grant for essentially just cap relief on the Blazers side. So that's what a potential framework looks like to me. I'm not sure if you had anything different.
I don't think there is one. from two sides, right? I think both sides would probably pass on the idea. So from Portland's end, they've shown really no indication that they want to tank it all this year. I mean, they seem to want to stay more or less competitive. And if we're all being honest, I mean, this is not the year to tank. There's no Scoot, there's no Victor, there's no Zion, no Luka, no K, none of that. This draft doesn't have that super high-end, top-level guy to have a bunch of teams tanking for. So they probably want to stay competitive. So I don't think they just dump Jeremy Grant for salary relief, like you said. And then on the Pistons end, I mean, Jeremy Grant, he's not a spring chicken. He's up there. It's a long-term contract. It's 5 years. And I think he might be a little overpaid even now. Obviously, the cap's going to go up, so there's a chance that as the years go on, it gets a little bit better as a percent of the total salary cap as he ages and kind of falls down and tapers off a little bit. But just from a Pistons standpoint, I'm not – the fit was great when he was here the first time. It would have been great, you know, on the contract he was previously on as well after they had traded him to the Blazers, but – 5 years at that number, I don't think it's a good idea as much as I love Jeremy when he was in town. So I think both sides is probably just not a fit. The Pistons would want to take him on a pure like salary dump and the Blazers won't want to do that.
Right. Exactly. Like I think where it would get held up is draft capital. I think like, the mm-hmm. Pistons situation is a little murky with they owe that protected pick. And with the way things are going, I don't think they're going to want to give up much to any draft capital, which makes things tough.
Right. Agreed. So what's another trade that you think the Pistons can make? And I'm going to shift this a little bit to just like names that you've got on a target list. And yeah. I'll go first because I actually made one. So I'll give you some time to think about it. For me, I've got, what is this, 2-7 names here. So Zach LaVine is an easy one. DeMar DeRozan, Rui Hachimura, Julius Randle. I don't think they'd trade Julius Randle, but you know you can call.
I don't Pascal think they will Siakam, either.
Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell. Yeah, no, I don't think they're moving Julius Randle, especially not the way the Knicks are playing right now. They're still a very good team. So cross him off then. I think those two forwards from the Spurs could probably be gettable. They're on pretty good contracts, and they're not game changers, but they both can score. And, you know, maybe you can shift deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit with these two very bad teams. And the Spurs and the Pistons. Siakam, he would be a good fit there at the four. Rui Hachimura is probably the easiest guy to get. He's a good scorer. He's not as good of a three-point shooter as maybe you'd like to see, but he is average at it. And he can defend a little bit better than Bojan, and he's younger. So, you know, I do think you could probably do the one-to-one Bojan for Rui in like a second, and the Lakers would probably think about it. But I mean, if this is going to be the way that they use Jaden Ivey, How does Zach LaVine sound?
Yeah, I think what the Bulls are doing is really interesting and like relevant for the Pistons. Like another name that I thought of was Alex Caruso. He's on a fairly cheap contract. He's also only partially guaranteed next year. So we know this front office prioritizes flexibility. Caruso gives you that. He also brings defense. So I don't know. I don't really have like a wish list for this per se. I feel like I've tried to think about what could actually happen. And I think the Spurs forwards and maybe even like Devontae Graham over there is like a realistic trade that we can make. I was trying to like work around to see what a trade could look like. I couldn't really like figure it out exactly, but I'm kind of just picturing like Killian Hayes being sent to San Antonio and becoming like a great backup point guard in the NBA, which is kind of like a nightmare, but I don't know. It's just something I could see happening.
Well, the Spurs, Lord knows they need a point guard. So, I mean, maybe they would really have some interest in Killian. My thing with all of this right now is like, I get that some fans won't want them to make a quote-unquote desperation move or a desperation trade, try to cash in on one of these young players that they have for a, you know, late 20s star who can maybe lift the team up this year, but not as much in 4 or 5 years. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, you can't be the Charlotte Bobcats that lost almost every game that season and think that the guys you have on this roster are going to pan out the way that you want, right? You can't have multiple weeks without a win and hope that the guys you have are going to pan out the way that you want. Like, at some point, these guys are either going to need to start winning somehow or be elevated to start winning somehow, or the wheels are just going to fall off entirely. I mean, Look back at that Lakers game, right? I mean, they got punched in the mouth after a nice opening 2-3 minutes, never recovered. They weren't running after the inbounds to get the ball in quickly. Energy was just drained because it's not for a lack of effort. These guys have just been hit so many times. This is almost the same roster as last season where they won 17 games. And now they just rattled off what are we up to now? 15, 16 game losing streak. Now. Yeah, they didn't win a game in the entire month of November. Like, you cannot let this continue happening and think that Cade Cunningham's going to be an all-star one day in Detroit. Because it's not. If this keeps up, that's not going to happen. Just full stop. So, in order, this is like the most circular logic that I've ever had, but I'm going to roll with it. Because in order to save the developmental process of whatever young guys you can keep, you need to cash in for a Zach LaVine, a DeMar DeRozan, a Calvin Johnson, a Siakam, someone that can come in and just get buckets and then hope for the best.
Yeah, like I like that. I'm just like not sure how realistic it is. Like I know. Like, are we going to go and make a trade for someone who is Siakam makes like $45 million a year, something like that. I was just thinking when I was like going through a trade we could make, like, I feel like it's going to sound so inconsequential, but like, I could just see it being like, we're bringing in a Doug McDermott or a Jetty Osman to at least be like a veteran body that's healthy, like someone that can shoot the ball. It sounds sad, frankly, but like you said, we're at the point where something needs to happen. Like the past few games, however long it's been, the team is just like helpless, really. Like they get punched, they just lose everything and there's no sense of getting back in the game. There needs everyone's saying like there needs to be changes, which I agree with. Like, what is that right now? I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe just like we can make a move where the assets that we have in-house that aren't playing, like someone will take them on as a salary dump, and we can at least bring in someone that can contribute to this team to help us win a game at some point.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. And typically, I think those moves need to happen as well. Like, this might have to be a year where two or three trades get made, you know, just to maybe get one really good player and then a couple other guys that can augment the roster and just kind of fill things out the rotation wise, right? But I'm with you on the something needs to change. You didn't win a game in the month of November. I keep coming back to that, but like that doesn't happen often. That's actually, it's worse because that's really hard to do in the NBA. These guys are all ridiculously talented basketball players. Even on this Pistons team, they're all incredible basketball players, and they didn't win a game in November. You have to change something.
I do have a question that I was thinking about today. If this same scenario, this losing streak, happened last year, like all of the situations are the same, like, yeah, we don't have like Asar and Marcus Sasser, but if we're going through like a winless November last year with like the whole, oh, like Wemby is the big prize at the end of the tunnel, like, do you think the energy around like the team and the fan base is a lot more high hopes than it is right now?
I think a little bit. For two reasons. One, I'm assuming Cade Cunningham's still out in this scenario last season. And two, it would have been last year. And most people would not have came or didn't come into last year really thinking this team's going to be really competitive. Some did. It wasn't as big of a segment. This year, felt like a lot of fans were thinking, okay, play-in game. Like, we'll be close to it. And there were a lot that didn't, but the group was a little bit larger. And I think a lot of that just has to do with it being, what, year four of the restore, right? So
yeah.
I think with the time frame comes a little bit more cynicism, probably.
Definitely.
All right, next question here. This is from Broad Fork Advisor from the DBB comments. He asks, how good or bad is Asar defensively one-on-one versus power forwards and centers? As Bogey gets closer to a return, could a front court of Asar, Bogey, and Stu hold up defensively?
For the first part of this question, I'd honestly say he's pretty good defensively compared to like front court players across the league. Like, I mean, he's undersized compared to most. Like, he's 6'6", so he's going to have a disadvantage there. But I think, like, the fundamentals and instincts that he have are, like, second to none. We were talking about him being, like, all defense in his rookie year. I don't know how realistic that is now. But, I mean, I think he's, like, a really good defensive player, both off the ball and guarding on ball. And compare him to like anyone you want in the league. Like, yeah, there's elite defenders, but I think Asar can hold his own against like anyone's like top option. Like, yeah, are some people gonna get buckets? Like, are there gonna be the guys you can't stop? Yeah, but he's gonna make them work for it, and at least make like life difficult. As for a front court with Asar, Bogey, and Stu, I would say flip-flop Stu for Duren here. That was my ideal five coming into the season: Cade, Ivy, Asar, Bojan, and Duren. So that's what I would go with. Like, Asar will help for a lot of what like Bojan is liable for out there. I think just if you flip-flop Stu and Duren there, I think that is doable defensively and you can get by. How do you see it, Wes?
I totally agree on the second part of that with the lineup. I think that would hold up with Durin there at the five. I do have some stats for us here on the forwards and the center matchups. This was from NBA.com, and you couldn't split out, threes and fours. It was just forwards, guards, and centers. But that being said, field goal percentage against forwards for Asar Thompson, this was 28% of his minutes. He's allowing 45%. Pretty good. Against centers, it's 50%, but that's only 6% of his minutes. So very small sample size, and honestly, not bad for how short he is. That 45% field goal against number is almost identical to what he's allowing against guards, which is where he's getting the most of his minutes. So, I know you can't, I couldn't have split out the threes and the fours there on that stat website, but it seems like he's more or less the same guy when he's guarding guards and when he's guarding forwards. And you look around the league, right? There aren't too many Evan Mobleys out there or Jaren Jackson Juniors that really play that power forward spot. It is a lot more wingy type players. So I do really think he can hold up even against the taller power forwards for 48 minutes. I do think he can do it.
Yeah, and I guess the concern with him not being able to is his size, really, like having opposing shooters just like get over the top of him, and that's how they beat him. Like, I think he's kind of proven he's not really gonna let that happen, or at least do everything he can not to. And man, just like his mid-range pull-ups, like how high he gets and like over defenders, I really think that he can at least do what he can to contest most shots, even if he's guarding up.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's jump into a couple more questions here. This one from @BasePistons on Twitter. He's asking, why doesn't Bagley get minutes in the fourth quarter? Second question, should he?
I mean, I think it's honestly just like Monty's been rolling with who is playing well. And I think with Bagley, it's always going to be defense is the question. But I don't know, like if Bagley's the one that's like scoring for us, then yeah, like I'm not opposed to it. I think you just have to think of how it limits you defensively, or just like the liabilities it opens up. Like, are we playing him next to a Stewart or a Jalen Duren? And then what happened? I'm also confused with Marvin Bagley, since like Wiseman was getting his minutes the
Oh yeah,
past couple
weird, right?
games. So yeah, I need to wrap my head around that as well. I think he's had a good season so far, so I don't see any reason he shouldn't get fourth quarter minutes if there's the opportunity for it.
I mean, yeah, he's definitely played really well this year. I've been very pleasantly surprised with how Bagley's shown up this season when he's been healthy. I think with the fourth quarter minutes, I would be open to it. So, should he? I think that's a maybe. I'm with you on that one. Why he doesn't, though, I think one thing we can pretty confidently say about Monty Williams is in the fourth quarter, you either need to shoot or be a good defender to get minutes. And Marvin Bagley doesn't do either of those things. So, like, you look up and down the roster, who played in the fourth quarter, right? Jaden Ivey. Well, he can shoot and he can get to the rim. He's not a great defender, but he can shoot it. He's shooting well this year. Sasser, he can shoot it. Burks, he can shoot it. Stanley Amude, shoot and an okay defender, right? Like you just go up and down. Even Duren is a good defender, though he's been hobbled, and I am a little worried about the ankle. Stewart, he's shooting a good percentage. He's a good defender. I mean, you could just go all the way down the list of guys that played fourth quarter minutes, and they've got one of those two things. So Bagley doesn't have either. I think that just kind of tanks his shot at fourth quarter minutes, to be honest. That, I don't know if there's much more to it than that for him. Like, can you think of anything?
No, that makes sense. I agree with it. It's probably just like a versatility thing. Like we know what he is, and maybe it just doesn't translate to clutch time, and that's really that. I am interested to see his role moving forward. Like, if he's going to be a healthy scratch at any point, I don't think he should. But yeah, I don't think it's anything more to look into than that.
All right, so we got another one from Twitter here. This is at DoeJumars. Shouting out a Free Press article from guy Sean Windsor, saying, I read beat writers talk about if things don't get better, Weaver needs to go. That was the title of the Free Press article by Sean Windsor. He's asking, what is better? And why should better than, quote unquote, historically bad be a barometer in year four of a rebuild?
Tough question. Definitely a tough question. Also, yeah, it was, just want to clarify, it was like a column from Sean Windsor. Don't want our guy Amari catching any strays or anything like that. But better to me is 15 wins, like our record last season. And that is with your star player or not being out. Like, if Weaver gets close to winning like 15 to 17 games again, like, yeah, the seat has to be a little hot. Like, should we make a move? Like, probably at that point. I'm still unsure of what making a front office move right now would do in the middle of the season. I just think, like, you have to see what's going on. Like, if this team can improve, let Troy Weaver have the chance to improve it. If he doesn't do it, then maybe that's proving that he can't put this roster together. Like, we've already seen that the personnel that's put together doesn't really work together. We don't have everything we need to even win a basketball game. So I think if you're not seeing improvement after last year, especially after your franchise guy plays in only 12 games last season, you have the worst record of the league, you get him back, you add a guy like Asar Thompson. Yeah, there are some other injuries that are impacting things, but if you can't improve with the guy who's supposed to be the guy, I think that does say something about the front office, and that's like the barometer of being better, I guess. Do you see it any differently?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I've been saying since the summer that if they don't win 20 wins, honestly, if they don't even get above 23 wins, like, there are going to be some difficult decisions. I don't know if that's fireable per se, but it at least, you know, tough conversations will end up being had if that ends up being the case. And right now, it sure does look like things are trending that way. Now, to your point about a front office move in the middle of the season, I'm with you, man. Like, you can't just do that. If you relieve anybody from their post right now, you're basically just signing this team up to ride a train into hell with no exits, right? Like, there are jumping off points here. Weaver can make a few moves. There are, you know, there's a lot going on in the NBA right now. You look at the Bulls, they're going to have a fire sale. He doesn't even have to go and get a guy like DeRozan, Levine, whatever. He could just get involved on the side of something like that, make an improvement on the margins of the roster. Like, there's still a lot of season left, and there's a lot of things that can be done. And I get that, you know, maybe if you're in the camp that they should fire Troy Weaver, you don't want Weaver to be the guy to make those moves. But if you remove him, then none of the moves are going to get made, because you're not going to let an interim make any decisions here. So your only shot right now is to give the guy some time. And if you get into the offseason and you've only won 18 games, then okay, you know, maybe it's uh-oh time and some decision has to be made. But at least for now, like I said it earlier, this team, if they want the young guys they have to make it to the other side, they can't be this bad. The only way that they cannot be this bad is if their GM starts making some moves. You need a guy there. You need a guy to make the moves. So I'm 100% with you. Now is not the time to make a change. I get it. Fans are emotional, but this is not the time.
Yeah, and just to be fair to like the to Sean's article that we're referencing, like his point, if things don't get better, then Weaver needs to go. He was saying like if we really are this bad, like we're on pace for, I don't even know if we're on pace to win 10 games in this season at this point. But the point was, if that's the case and like that's how you finish the season, like, do you want to let Troy Weaver manage another draft? Do you want him to have full management of all the cap space that we have and another offseason of setting it up? So just wanted to be clear and be sure we were clarifying that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a great article. You guys go read it. Sean does great work there. So, all right, let's do a couple quick hitters before hanging it up for the evening. This is from our guy HR Moroz on Twitter. Quickly, any interest in Karl Anthony Towns, Blake?
Yeah, like, I mean, what's it going to take is always the question for me. I tried to do my homework and see what it would take for this one. I found a little like Bojan, Monty Morris, Killian Hayes package that gets you to the money. You're definitely going to have to throw in draft assets. But I mean, I think if you can go and get a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, like, yeah, it depends what it would take and if we can even do it, which I don't know that we could. But yeah, I'd be interested. How about you?
The short answer is yes. And I think just on like a blanket thought for all of our listeners that are going to send in some questions on like hypothetical trades, because this applies to Zach LaVine, you know, Pascal Siakam. If you look at these guys and you go, okay, they're definitely all-stars and they're borderline all-NBA guys, would you be interested? Yeah, definitely. Definitely would be interested. Do I think it could happen? No. You know, I'm not expecting anything like that. And with Cat in particular, the Wolves are playing pretty good right now, I think. Like, I'm not even sure he'd be up for a trade right now. If anything, I wonder if they'd rather get rid of, like, Gobert or something, right? So, yeah, I don't think really Cat is up for the getting at the moment. But if he ever were, like, yes, please make the call. He is a really, really good player. And if the price gets too high, then you back out. But like, yeah, if a dude is definitely an all-star caliber guy, I'm interested. Like, sure, let's think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be so rare. Like, they're towards the top of the West. It has to be so rare for a team like that to trade a star player in the middle of a season like that. Like, I can understand them wanting to improve their roster, like picking up rotational pieces to help them out. I think that's what the Pistons can give them, but I just don't know if that's going to net you a Karl Anthony Towns at this time, maybe in the future.
Yeah, I agree. And this one's in a similar vein. This is Dave 10.9 miles north of LCA from DBB's comment section. He's asking, is it possible to pry Trey Murphy away from New Orleans, and what would it take to get him? I'll just go first because my answer is short. I don't think it is. So go ahead and have fun with your hypothetical. But I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I don't think – has Trey Murphy played this year? I don't know. He's just about to make his season debut. Like, I cannot see New Orleans giving him up right now. I think if they did, they would have to attach him to some dead money that they want the Pistons to take on. Looking at it, they would attach him to like a Larry Nance and the Pistons could send back like a Marvin Bagley. I don't think that really gets the deal done. I mean, Trey Murphy is another name. Like, I'd love to have him in Detroit. Like, if we can get him, yeah. I don't think we can, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's a great shooter. He's a pretty good defender. He fits like a glove with what they're doing down there. I don't think there's any way. So let's close out on this one. This was kind of interesting. And, hey, it continues our finish the pod with Asar Thompson. So this is Base Pistons again on Twitter. He's asking, is Asar Thompson's heavy defensive role responsibilities hindering his offensive development, like his shooting, for example?
Well, first I have to say I love this tradition. It always ends us on a positive note. Even though Asar has had some struggles, he didn't start tonight against the Knicks. I personally don't think his like defensive workload is hindering the offensive side. I think it's more, I guess, just playing alongside a guy like Cade, or maybe just like playing with Ivy and Cade in the past few games. I think when he was developing, like, he was a great playmaker. Like, we've seen those flashes already. And he was like known for his defense at that point too. So I think it's just a little bit of an adjustment to the league, adjusting to who he's playing with. He's not the first, second, or maybe even third option in any of our lineups that we're playing. Can he work to that? Yes. And I don't know. I just don't see, like, I know he's working hard on defense. Oftentimes he's drawing the opponent's best player, but I just don't see that impacting the work he's doing on offense. Is there still a lot of work to do on that side? Yes. But we're still, what, like, not even 20 games into his career. So I think it's just coming with time. And I also want to give Asar a shout out because he made a three tonight. I was happy to see that go down for him.
He did make a three tonight.
Yeah. What do you think on this one?
I think I'm with you that the answer is no. I don't think it's really hindering his offensive development. But I think it's because all of the things on offense that he's struggling with were things that we knew he would struggle with. And, you know, we kind of got lucky last season with Jaden Ivey, right? Jaden Ivey actually added a mid-range game during the season. That doesn't happen very often with young players. Like, guys, not even just young players, veterans, NBA veterans, like, guys do not usually add something new over the course of the NBA season. That stuff all happens in the offseason. Once they get to the league, can they improve at things they're already good at? You know, can, like, Cade, for example, get more efficient as the year goes on? Yes, absolutely. Stuff like that, that'll happen. Like, can he get better at the turnovers? Yes, that's stuff that can happen. Can Asar Thompson add a new three-point shot? Probably not. You know, can he add a pull-up game in the mid-range? Probably not. Like, is his ball handling going to get good enough where he can go take ISOs? Probably not. Like, that's all stuff that's going to happen over the summer. So I think you just look at him, and it's not because he's expending so much energy on defense that all of these problems are popping up on the offensive end. These are just problems that he has as a player. And we knew that coming in, and it doesn't make him any less of a good prospect, right? Or any less of a talent on the court when he's playing. It's just, he's a young player. He's got warts. He's going to work on them. I just don't think it would have ever been reasonable to expect him to develop those things during the year anyway. So, no, I don't think it's getting in the way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we knew what he was going to have to work on when we drafted him. I think we're just seeing it now, and it's going to take some time. And I don't know. I know he's had some struggles recently, but still can't say enough good things about the guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even tonight he didn't have his best game, but he was still an impactful defender. So we got to keep giving him his flowers for that. because it's hard to do as a rookie, you know. But
yeah.
All right, we've gone long enough, Blake. This felt good though. You know, they did play a competitive game. It was a close loss instead of a blowout. Kind of a backbreaker that they didn't get the win, but they did have 20 turnovers. Like, I guess you take the good and the bad.
Yeah, you know, it's good to talk about it. I mean, it's been tough. Like, shout out to you, shout out to everyone who's watching, and just the fan base and everyone for getting through this. I mean, hopefully they're bound to get a win. It almost came tonight. It definitely hurts that it wasn't.
I'm not gonna go 2-80.
Yeah, I mean, if they do, I could definitely say that Troy Weaver would probably be fired in that situation, but they're not.
Everyone would be fired in that situation.
They are going to win a basketball game, hopefully at some point soon, so we can talk about what was good, what it means, and how they can build off it. But yeah, we'll be back same time next week. Thank you again for everyone who tuned in. Special thanks to Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. Shout out again to everyone who joined us live, and whether you're listening to us on your commute, we'll catch you next week live with us here on YouTube or wherever you stream your podcasts. We can't wait to talk more Detroit hoops with you all.